Hello, my name's Florence. Welcome to the Obs Pod. I'm an NHS obstetrician, hoping to share some thoughts and experiences about my working life. Perhaps you enjoy Call the Midwife, maybe birth fascinates you, or you're simply curious about what exactly an obstetrician is. You might be pregnant and preparing for birth. Perhaps you work in maternity and want to know what makes your obstetric colleagues tick, or you want some fresh ideas and inspiration. Whichever of these is the case, and for that matter, anyone else that's interested, the Obs Pod is for you. Episode 142, Water Birth. I can hear you thinking, water birth? Really? An obstetrician talking about water birth? And you're right. For the most part, water birth is the preserve of midwives. I was lucky. As a medical student, I witnessed the most incredible water birth. So right from the early stages of my career, I knew what birth, physiological birth, uninterrupted, would look like. And the joy of a water birth. So why have I chosen to talk about water birth today as an obstetrician? I think it's because I'm concerned about the equity of access to a water birth. When I was in labour with my second child, attempting a vaginal birth after caesarean, which if you've listened to my motherhood episodes, did not go successfully. The best part of my labour, the bit in which I felt comfortable, confident and relaxed, was in a birthing pool. It was warm, it was soothing, it provided a buoyancy and the ability to move into whatever position I wanted. At the time, I didn't even really think about the choices I was making. I was offered a pool. I immediately thought, yes, that's what I want. And once I tried it, I loved it. But how many women who are attempting vaginal birth after caesarean or have more complicated pregnancies or births in the past for other reasons have access to a pool? Often a birthing pool is the preserve of a midwifery-led unit, or something a woman lays on for herself when planning a home birth. When I look at our local unit statistics, around 50% of women planning a home birth have a water birth, and it's roughly the same sort of numbers that use a birthing pool on our midwifery-led unit. Yet out of 8 labour rooms on our main obstetric labour ward, how many pools do I have? 1. And this interests me because even for that one, it was a bit of a battle. The then matron of the area, the wonderful Dawn Kerslake, who now works with South East Coast Ambulance Service as a consultant midwife, and I were convinced that having a pool on the main obstetric labour ward would be beneficial. Women that perhaps were on the main obstetric labour ward because of a previous heavy blood loss after birth, or who were on the main obstetric unit because they'd had a caesarean previously, they could use a pool on the main obstetric labour ward. But at the time, that wasn't an obvious decision to make. But why is that? Turning to the NICE guidance, the intrapartum care guideline for women with an uncomplicated pregnancy, it clearly states 1.8.4, offer the woman the opportunity to labour in water for pain relief. That dates from 2007. 2007, that's ages ago now. 2007 happens to be the year I became a consultant obstetrician. So in all that time, why do we still only have one pool on the obstetric labour ward? And we have three on our midwifery led unit out of four rooms. And even that third pool was only installed in recent years. In this way, we're not providing equal access to labour in water for pain relief, are we? So where has this idea of water for pain relief come from? In my mind, even as a medical student, I had in mind the images of the amazing water births witnessed and supported by Michel Odent, the French obstetrician. So it seemed to me that water birth, or labour in water, was a relatively recent thing. So I turned to my lovely book, Birth, A History, by Tina Cassidy, that I enjoy very much and I've mentioned before. And she talks about the idea that Odent himself stumbled on the idea after reading Frederick Leboyer's Birth Without Violence. Odent, reading this, thought about women naturally gravitating to a pool where water reduced their pain, called the aquadural effect, and helped them to relax and aid dilatation. And he was using water for pain relief. But in other places I've looked back, it seems like water birth could predate this significantly. There's discussion on the internet about the possibility of water birth, perhaps in ancient Egypt, with rock carvings depicting water births, and possibly also in the ancient Minoan civilization on the island of Crete, where women laboured and birthed in water. In California, there are stories of the indigenous population giving birth in natural pools, and also stories from Hawaii and Maori. The first recorded account of water birth in the modern Western world was in a village in France, and some accounts on the internet talk about 1803 and others 1805. So actually, the idea that a water birth is a new idea is probably erroneous. It's probably been going on for thousands of years. But with any change in practice, of course, we as obstetricians and medical professionals have to consider risk. I remember this as a medical student, the query about what temperature should the water be? Was there a risk of infection, particularly if the mother's waters had broken? How could we tell if the woman was bleeding a lot? And predictably, medico-legal issues reared their heads in terms of the recommended temperature, the monitoring of the baby's heartbeat. And I remember this being a kind of debate at the time. A study in 1999, which was during my specialty training, was published of 4,000 cases of water birth, the first major study of water birth, in which five babies died. Two, in fact, were completely unrelated to water birth. One, the baby had died before birth. One of the others was a concealed pregnancy where the woman gave birth at home in a bath. The other three, one was attributed to a herpes infection, one a brain hemorrhage, and one underdeveloped lungs. And these deaths only translate to 1.2 in 1,000, compared with 0.8 in 1,000 uncomplicated pregnancy births out of water. But this threw up some concerns about water birth. As I moved through my career, water birth has become more acceptable again. But it's no wonder, with this background and history, that perhaps those of us on the medical side of maternity care have been a little bit more reluctant to adopt things. Hence, perhaps, the reason that I had some resistance when installing a pool on our obstetric unit. It's important that we clean the pool appropriately in between women, and indeed we have quite strict rules about not only the cleaning of the pool but maintaining the correct temperature of the pool and not leaving the pool full for a prolonged period of time if the woman isn't in it. So given around 50% of women are choosing water in midwifery-led settings, and the NICE guidance recommends that water should be offered to women as a pain relief option, where are we at with the data? Well, thinking about this episode, one of the reasons I decided to do it was because of the publication of a relatively recent article, September 2022, about a systemic review and meta-analysis to look at intrapartum interventions and maternal and neonatal outcomes following immersion in water during labour and water birth. And this looked at 36 studies with more than 157,000 participants, 31 studies in obstetric units and 4 in midwifery-led settings. And the results are quite incredible, really. Water immersion significantly reduced the use of epidural, the use of injected opioids, that's painkillers, strong painkillers like pethidine or morphine or diamorphine, significant reduction in episiotomy, that's the cut on the perineum, significant reduction in maternal pain, and significant reduction in postpartum hemorrhage. And of course, with that, fairly obviously, there was an increase in maternal satisfaction, increase in the odds of an intact perineum, so no need for any stitches. The only slight negative was water birth was associated with increased chance of cord avulsion, that's the cord snapping. Very slight risk, although the absolute risk remained low at 4.3 per thousand babies versus 1.3 per thousand with other vaginal births. There was no difference in any other identified neonatal outcome. So this is incredible. If you offered women or obstetricians an intervention that had all those reductions without any or very, very minor increase of potential harm, and let's face it, if the cord snaps, then if you take immediate action, the outcome for the baby is fine. This is really powerful. This is a massively powerful intervention that could massively improve outcomes and increase maternal satisfaction. So why aren't we taking this evidence and literally putting a pool in every birth room everywhere? And I appreciate some women wouldn't choose to use it. I appreciate some women would choose an epidural. Water isn't for everybody. But it does make me think, why aren't there more water births? Again, looking at water births, I looked at kind of what's the national rate, and it seems to be around 10 to 13% in the UK, which, given that this is such a beneficial intervention, providing a pool, why is it that low? And that brings me to why I've decided to do this episode in the first place as an obstetrician. Because part of the answer of why it's so low is us. And that's why water birth is essential, understanding and relevant for an obstetrician, because we effectively become gatekeepers. If we are labelling women with a risk factor or a diagnosis, however mild, or perhaps recommending induction, we can inadvertently become a gatekeeper and deny them access to water, both for pain relief and for giving birth itself. I have quite a lot of women who might need induction, maybe because of their age or gestational diabetes or borderline blood pressure, or they're overdue. And one of the immediate questions they ask me is, can I use water? Can I use a birthing pool? And the answer is, if we induce you with a prostaglandin pessary and labour gets going successfully with that, then yes, you can. But if we start to need to use intravenous syntocinon, oxytocin, then the answer is no, you can't. We may restrict women's access to water by our suggestions about heartbeat monitoring, because whilst some units have wireless CTG monitoring, and thankfully we do where I work, continuous heartbeat monitoring of the baby during labour can be challenging in the pool. Sometimes you can do it, sometimes you can't. It depends if you've properly charged your wireless monitor. So if you recommend continuous heartbeat monitoring, that may start to limit her choices about use of water. Sometimes we don't like women who've had a previous postpartum hemorrhage or heavy bleeding after giving birth. Sometimes we don't like them to give birth in water because we're worried about our ability to assess their blood loss in the pool, because it becomes diluted by the amount of water in the birthing pool. It can be difficult for us to estimate. Or we worry if she starts bleeding and becomes faint and unwell, she might be difficult to get out of the pool. We will also sometimes bring in restrictions if a woman is overweight. And again, that's not necessarily about whether or not it's safe for her to use the pool. It might be that we have limitations about how we're going to monitor the baby's heartbeat. It's harder. We might want to put on a fetal scalp electrode. That's an electrode that attaches to the skin on the baby's head to more accurately measure the baby's heartbeat, because we may find it difficult to do that through her tummy if she's got a bit of excess tissue there because she's more overweight. So that may limit us. Or we may say that women over a certain size can't use the pool because if they collapse in the pool, which is unlikely but possible, then we'll have difficulty lifting them out of the pool. So it becomes a NHS kind of moving and handling challenge. Do we need a hoist, etc.? So as staff, we can end up inadvertently discouraging or not recommending or restricting access to water by our behaviour and our consultations, even if there is the physical possibility of there being a pool there. So the pool that we installed on our obstetric unit is used some of the time. And we have had water births in there. And in fact, I was really overjoyed to actually be present and be privileged enough to witness the first birth we had in that birthing pool on the obstetric unit. But that single pool is used nowhere near as often as it would be nice for it to be used. And is that about us? We're not encouraging women to use it. Or maybe we've got a woman in that room who has chosen to get out of it and do something else for her labour, and then we can't move another woman in there because we've only got one pool. But it's not utilised the way it would ideally be. Bit rambly this episode. But in essence, my zesty bit. If you are a member of maternity staff, go away, read that BMJ article and think to yourself, why are we not improving access for women, all women, to have access to a birthing pool, whether they use it for pain relief or whether they use it for birth itself? We need to let go of the fact that it's awkward and difficult for us, for certain women. And we need to realise just how beneficial water can be. The evidence is there. As a pregnant woman listening to this, think through your choices. And when people are suggesting things that may restrict your access to a pool, don't be frightened to challenge that. And I'm not saying go against all the guidance you're being given and the recommendations people are making, but question them. Don't be frightened to unpick and understand exactly why, for you, in your individual situation, why do they think that wouldn't be possible if that's what you want? So if you want to use a birthing pool, and there's something that's a little bit more complicated and staff are telling you that you can't or you don't fit guidance or there might not be one available, try and unpick exactly what's underneath that. And are there people like a consultant midwife or consultant obstetrician or a professional midwifery advocate that you could talk things through with and think through, is it really not possible? Is there anything that could be done? Is there an alternative to what they're offering you? Is it possible to make it happen if a birthing pool is an important part of your birth plan? I very much hope you found this episode of the OBSPOD interesting. If you have, it'd be fantastic if you could subscribe, rate and review on whatever platform you find your podcasts, as well as recommending the OBSPOD to anyone you think might find it interesting. There's also tons of episodes to explore in my back catalogue, from clinical topics, my career and journey as an obstetrician, and life in the NHS more generally. I'd like to assure women I care for that I take confidentiality very seriously, and take great care not to use any patient identifiable information unless I have expressly asked the permission of the person involved on that rare occasion when it's been absolutely necessary. If you found this episode interesting and want to explore the subject a little more deeply, don't forget to take a look at the programme notes, where I've attached some links. If you want to get in touch to suggest topics for future episodes, you can find me at the OBSPOD on Twitter and Instagram, and you can email me theobspod@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.